recorded. Okay. So I guess we will move in now that the recording has started. My name is Peggy O'Neill, and I am the host of the call today. And it's hosted by the Tyson Center for Faith and Spirituality in the Workplace. And this recording will be available to be heard again if you want to hear it or want to pass it on to somebody else. It'll be on the Tyson Center website. I'm going to ask that you mute your phones when you're not talking, and that's usually *6. And later in our program today, during the question and answer period, I'm going to ask you to please state your name before you ask any questions. And I'll explain more about the question and answer part when we get to that piece. How I want to start today is with something I found on Sarah's website. It's part of her blog on her website, Sarah Miller. Dr. Sarah Miller is our speaker today. And but I'm going to start with this piece from her website. And it's dated March 7th of 2012. It's entitled, It's in the Details. And even though this piece is written specifically for physicians, for those of us that aren't physicians or don't usually work with physicians, I thought it was it's definitely something that we can all take something from, I think, whether we're managers, coaches, leaders, or other people, just moving through the day. So the title is, it's in the details, Effective versus Efficient. Both are needed in medicine today. Efficient is a skill and best means to get things done as soon as possible. Effective are the small things that create lasting patient memories of being cared for. They don't take much, if any, more time, yet they create an impression of a caring physician. To be effective, take a pause, one deep breath, smile, and enter the room with, "Hello, sir. Good morning, ma'am. How is my star patient? Our time will be short, but sweet. It is a pleasure to watch over you." And as you exit the room with a smile, say, "Blessings to you. It was a pleasure to serve you." It's that simple. Think of a few short phrases you could say that convey caring. Remember, peace begins with a smile. So that's from Sarah's blog, and now what I'd like for us to do is spend 30 seconds in silence, either reflecting on this piece or just sitting with the offering of the piece. Okay. This teleconference is sponsored by the Tyson Center for Faith and Spirituality in the Workplace at the Sam M. Walton College of Business, University of Arkansas. The purpose of this series of calls on coaching is to educate listeners about the value of coaching in integrating faith and spirituality in the workplace and to help people become familiar with our Tyson Center coaches and their styles and philosophies of working. Our guest today is Dr. Sarah Miller. She's president of True North Coaching and is a pioneer and leader in the field of coaching physicians. In 2003, she was one of the first and few who specialized in working with physicians who are labeled as having disruptive behaviors. Sarah also has extensive experience in coaching physicians who are disillusioned and those moving from clinical positions into medical directorships. She holds the prestigious Professional Certified Coach credential from the International Coach Federation and served on its Ethics and Standard Board. She earned her doctorate in Education and Human Development from the University of Arkansas. She is a graduate of Martin Seligman's Authentic Happiness Coaching Program, and many of you know Seligman is known as the father of positive psychology. She is also certified by the Physician Coaching Institute and the Certified Professional Coach, she's certified as a Certified Professional Coach from the Hudson Institute of Santa Barbara. I apologize, I left something out on my typing. Anyway, she's a certified professional coach with the Hudson Institute of Santa Barbara. So welcome, Sarah, Dr. Sarah Miller. So glad to have you here today. I'm going to start by asking you to tell us a little bit about yourself and why you started coaching.
Okay. Well, I have earned all my degrees in the area of human development and typical and normal development, looking at the adult from a healthy point of view rather than a pathological or there's some, you know, personality disorder or some sort of mental disorder involved. So that's been a passion of mine for all of my life. And I took a different path after graduating with my doctorate. I did the university teaching and did some statewide management of a statewide program. But I found myself drawn to the one-on-one, and my staff always used to joke with me if there was someone, we had a, one part of our service was to have a call-in line where people first learned of something about their family that was distressing, they would call into our center, and I would be the one rushing to the phone and the one that would be wanting to spend, you know, time with that person. I just really love the one-on-one and the intimacy. So in 2002, I learned about coaching, and I went to an ICF conference, interviewed a lot of different schools, and decided to become a coach and have enjoyed it ever since.
And how did you start working with physicians? I just think it's so fascinating that that's where you went with your... Yeah.
That first year of coaching, you know, I was coaching practically anybody that had two chickens and a basket of eggs. I mean, in a pulse. And it's that first year of trying to get your, you know, clientele built up and trying to get some experience under your belt. And so I had a really wide range of clients that first year. But it just so happened towards the latter part of that year, an orthopedic surgeon called me and wanted to be coached. And he had been called before the physician wellness committee at his hospital and was about to be terminated. So he self-initiated and called, and of course this was sort of terrifying to me because I was so accustomed to doing more of a life coaching and not coaching of a physician, and I had all these assumptions like, oh, he's going to be so smart and he's not going to want to pick up a crayon and draw the circle on the paper and different things like that. So at the end of, he came, and we had a wonderful coaching engagement. Huh. And at the end of my first year, I sort of looked at every single client I had coached, and I really discovered and felt I enjoyed coaching this physician the most. And there's a lot of reasons for that, but I like people who, when you lay things out before them, they problem solve very well. And also, I was starting to see back in 2003 that this was going to be a niche that hospitals, healthcare really didn't know what to do with physicians that they were considering as being disruptive. They were sent to a committee that's accustomed to dealing with uncompromised physicians. And by compromised, I mean, you know, they're doing substance abuse or they have alcohol abuse, some other reason why they should not be practicing. So pretty much doctors of this, you know, with this sort of issue, hospitals just didn't know what to do other than run them through the committee and then put them back into the hospital setting or terminate them. or terminate rather their hospital privileges.
So what have you found the benefits of coaching then? I mean, I know it, I guess, you know, they're able to work again, but can you be specific about some of the benefits that you've seen?
Oh, sure. One of the, I think what I, when I'm talking with someone and going to develop a coaching engagement, usually I'm speaking with the vice president of medical affairs or perhaps called chief medical officer in some hospitals still. But what I do is tell them that if we can retain a physician, and I should make a note here that most of my clientele are surgeons, cardiovascular or cardiothoracic or anesthesiologist. I would say that's the primary, and emergency room physicians as well. But if I could retain them for a year at least, I have saved that hospital a great deal of investment in terms of financial and human investment. Let's say, for example, a surgeon makes $500,000 a year. Just to recruit and hire another surgeon to replace them is three times that surgeon's salary. So that's, you know, $1.5 million. Of cost that is being saved, not to mention all the other surrounding events that means that the OR staff have to get adjusted to a new person and so on and so forth. So the benefits are really for the hospital. The hospital administrator likes to hear words like return on investment, and so that's their benefit. For the physician, the real benefit is you could look at it from a sort of very, very simple thing of it gives them an hour to sit down and to think and to process what is going on in their life and in their work. But in a long-term process, if they make, and most do, I would say all but one that I have coached has been retained by the hospital they were working at. But let's see, what was I going to say? That all but one were retained. I was going somewhere with that. But anyway, that's a senior moment.
That's great.
but for them, actually, if they can make a transformation, and what I feel my work is doing is reconnecting someone back to their calling. A lot of the clients I have found out are called to medicine. They go in it because they have a compassion and a desire to restore. And if we can get back to reconnecting to that calling and also just understanding or accepting the way healthcare is, doesn't mean we like it, but it's extraordinarily stressful, then we see some transformation and we see sort of understanding of what it is, how they want to be a physician, or is this the right place for them? Or in the case of physicians that I coach who are moving from clinical practice into leadership roles, such as medical directorships, they sort of learn about leadership, and they get to shortcut getting an MBA just to learn some of the things, but they learn about themselves as they are as a leader, and therefore it creates a more cohesive team.
I think you've touched on this some with what you've talked about the purpose, somebody reconnecting with their purpose and why, and then becoming more of a leader in their work. But could you talk to us more about what the connection is with coaching and faith and spirituality in the workplace?
Yes. First of all, physicians are healers. And I feel like in my role as a coach, I too am just a vessel for something greater than myself. And I feel that if we can reconnect to our spirit, reconnect to something greater than ourselves, it helps us make it through the challenges. One of the things that I've observed in my coaching, I have different types of clients, but let's just imagine it's the toughest client actually is the one who is labeled as disruptive, and they've been yelled at by their superior to straighten up, and if you don't, you're going to get fired. So they come to me really struggling, with their calling and with keeping on and going forward. So if we can, one of the patterns that I've seen is in the beginning, there's a lot of resistance. There's a lot of lack of trust. You know, it's either go see Sarah Miller or get terminated, and they choose the less of two worst options in their mind. And when they come, they see that they have someone who is, you know, there for them, listening to them, but my trust will always be challenged. And until that is gained, the resistance can be fairly high. But one of the things I've noticed in the pattern, once that is accomplished, and it's usually about the third or the fourth month, and I listen for this little key flag to come up, which is they will inevitably start speaking about something spiritual. They'll say, oh, Sister Mother Teresa says, you know, put your family first, or I went to church and the priest said this, or my calling, you know, the reason I got into medicine is I wanted to help, you know, this kind of patient. So I really listen for that. And to me, that is spirit. And when I hear that, I say, okay, the healing has begun for them. We're on the path. And so that's how I use spirit at work. And in my own personal self, I really just see myself as a vessel for something greater. And I just allow that to happen. And I'm very sort of intuitive, and I'm willing to listen to sort of my higher intuition to guide me. And sometimes that may mean breaking rules.
I've really noticed that about you, Sarah, when I'm around you, how intuitive you are and how present you are with people. And I'm also wondering, I know that you now have a Tibetan Buddhist monk, Geshe, as your partner, and I'd love to hear how you are integrating Buddhist philosophy into your coaching.
Okay. Yes, I am a Christian by upbringing. I was raised in the Episcopal Church and had to be there every day, time the church doors were open. But since I've moved to Fayetteville, Arkansas, we have a Buddhist community, and we have a teacher there who's a very, very high training and standard, and he has basically like two PhDs, and he's Tibetan Buddhist from the same lineage as the Dalai Lama. And so for my own personal self, I started learning about this philosophy and the way of looking at things and thinking about compassion combined with wisdom and how we want to alleviate the suffering of all human beings. And so my teacher, he actually reminds me of a lot of the tough doctors that I get. He's very tough. And
yes, he is.
Wise. Pardon me?
Yes, he is.
Yes, he is. Oh. He's very tough. He's, you know, for my impression of monks were that they would be, you know, sort of very kind and sweet. He is very kind, but he's also very tough. I have to say that, you know, he'll say, how can you think like that, or something of that nature. I mean, he'll just be late right out there. But I felt like we began conversations that he had something to offer, The Buddhist philosophy had something to offer. And he's a professor as well at the University of Arkansas and teaches meditation and teaches how to relieve stress and teaches how to, you know, sort of acceptance of things. So I decided to pull him in. And what we're doing, we're trying a new model, which is, again, we're not trying to put religion on anyone, but Buddhist philosophy is just integrated into his being. And we do weekend intensives with a physician, and a physician will fly into Fayetteville, will stay there for a weekend, and Geshe and I spend time with them, and we spend some direct, you know, coaching time as well as cooking a dinner together and communing together. So, I've started a partnership with him, and I'm excited to see where it may go.
Where do you see the future of your coaching going?
In speaking with Geshe, one thing that we're talking about, every year with the University of Arkansas, he takes over a group of college students to interview Tibetan refugees who are older to preserve their story and to preserve their culture. And he and I have been talking about taking some American practicing physicians and taking them to Tibet to meet with the Dalai Lama's Tibetan Medical Institute to talk with them to see how it is that they care for patients and to see if there could be any learning or transference. So that's kind of a dream that we have. I do see my coaching practice being an alternative to punitive coaching approaches and one that will be acknowledged as being successful in making transformation. And so I think in the future, I know Vanderbilt has a program, and it's a wonderful program, but it's booked oftentimes, so a physician can't get in a timely manner, but we can handle that. So I sort of see that as we're taking a unique approach mm-hmm. with a physician intensive weekend.
Yeah. Mhm. Can you tell us about a client who was transformative for you? A situation where
I have to say every client has touched me in some very, very deep way. I think in general, before I started coaching physicians, I had some of the mistaken ideas that are sometimes in the general public about this kind of profession. Surgeons think they're gods, they're arrogant, that kind of thing. And it made me a little fearful, honestly, to be coaching in that area. But once I met and sat one-on-one with these incredible, caring human beings who have just lost their way, I totally was moved. I mean, I've had tremendous privilege to be perhaps someone that they can talk to and say things that they've never been able to say before. You know, when there's a bad outcome in medicine, it's not talked about. And, you know, people carry these things around in their heart that, this happened to a family, this happened to a child that I was attending to. But yet the medical training teaches physicians early on to have an emotional detachment. So they're having to balance this act of, you know, of being a compassionate doctor, yet not being attached to outcomes.
I'd like to circle back with something you said a little while ago when you said that the way spirit shows up in coaching or has shown up in coaching is that you're listening for or something to occur or come from the physician. And an example would be that they said, and Mother Teresa said so-and-so, and so that helped support you in moving into a discussion around that. Could you tell us more about how that plays out? Like, once they open up in that way, like, what happens for the physician? Or can you play that out some, how it supports the physician moving forward and how you work with that?
Yeah. One surgeon came to me, and he was very disappointed with the way the finances were being spent in his hospital, because he saw that the hospital was going with a vendor who provided, at a cheaper rate, lower quality, in this case it was needles, and he saw the outcomes of that. He saw the results of having this new vendor and this savings of, well, I guess, $250,000. So he would take, you know, pot shots at the chief financial officer or the CEO in meetings, and he was not making himself popular. And he's a brilliant, brilliant man, and was really the moneymaker for that hospital. But that wasn't going to keep him from being on the, you know, on the hot griddle. When we process something like that, I'm trying to think specifically the Mother Teresa quote, but one of them was, don't spend 1 second in negative thinking or approach towards someone. And I'm sorry, I can't quite recall it, but he brought that up, and he also brought up start with the family first. So he was starting to realize his life was out of balance. He was spending too much time at work. He had 4 children under the age of 10, and he started paying more attention, like, how can I, you know, I'm a busy surgeon, but how can I pay attention to my children? How can I give them quality time? You know, he started asking these kinds of questions. And then he started asking, and he came up with a phrase that I thought was fantastic, be patient for the patient. And he was asking, well, okay, taking these pot shots aren't really working. What does work? And so he started to see, well, I need to make a collaborative effort. I need to sit down and have coffee with the CMO or the CEO, and I need to build a relationship here, and that will be more effective for my patients. So he just kind of, you know, once I saw this kind of spirituality coming in, I started seeing problem solving coming in, and his own creation of how to best work for his patients. He really was going to be terminated. I mean, the things were lined up for him. And
I'm really touched by how you're working with one person, wound up touching so many people. I mean, I know we see that a lot with coaching, but your story there is very moving about his children and the patients and the other people in the hospital. That's very incredible.
Yeah.
Well, in a minute or two, I'm going to open this up to see if there are any questions people have that they'd like to ask you, or not any questions, but I'm going to open it up for questions. Is there anything else you would like to tell us before we take questions?
No, I look forward to the questions.
Okay, wonderful. And so Judy, would you mind telling us Vivian, how to ask questions?
Yeah, just press *6, and that'll unmute you so that you can ask questions, and we'll have you in line, and I'll ask you to go ahead and ask your question whenever we get you lined up in our queue.
Oh, wonderful, Vivian. So you'll coordinate that for us? Thank you. So who has a question? And if you would state your name as you're asking the question.
While we're waiting for people to figure out, I just tried doing, this is Judy, by the way. I just tried doing the star six, and it it didn't work for me, but I'm a moderator, so I'm not sure if that's a technical issue or not. I would suggest, Vivian, that we turn the mute mode off, because we have a small enough group that anybody can just oh, wait, we've got a question.
Here we go.
Oh, I see that.
Right.
Okay.
Abigail, would you like to go ahead and ask your question?
Is that for me? It's Abby?
Yes.
Oh, so thank you, Dr. Miller, for your comments. I am a coach. I coach executive directors and senior managers, not in healthcare, in other areas. And I noticed that you studied with Dr. Gayor in the Physician Coaching Institute.
Yes.
So, and I know about her program, which I may take. What do you think about coaches who are not in healthcare, about our ability to be effective coaching physicians, and in terms of establishing credibility and trust with them?
Okay. So let me just restate your question as I understand it. You coach executives and directors, but not in healthcare. And your question is more about how could you perhaps enter into the healthcare profession of coaching physicians and be seen as effective by your clients. Is that about right?
Yes, not so much how I can enter the field, but how can we be seen? Can you see us being successful with physicians?
I think good coaching is good coaching. And if you're being successful in your role right now and you're seeing transformation, I think that that's very transferable. I do think there are specifics between healthcare and corporations, and maybe not the administrative side of things, but the clinical side of things. I consider that more of a professional, not that they are more professional, but they're more independent, so to speak. They're their own boss. They're kind of independent contractors. Lawyers, I think of as this as well. So there's a little bit of difference there, and I think there is a learning curve to understand the dynamics of, hospital politics. But I certainly think your credibility would come from your own coaching and your willingness to learn the essential things that you need to know to work it with that community well.
Uh-huh. Okay. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Abby. Thank you, Sarah.
Yeah.
Do we have another question?
Okay, we're unmuted. So if anyone wants to ask a question, I think we can probably handle you just speaking up and going ahead with your question.
Okay.
Does anyone have a question right now for Sarah?
Well, while you're thinking about your questions, Sarah, I also noticed that you are—you have quite a few assessment tools that you use and that you've been certified in using. Would you like to speak to that some, like how you use them, what your purpose is in using them, and why? Because I know you're certified in several. What your thoughts are about that?
I love to learn, and I love assessments of all kinds. In fact, if you come to a dinner party of mine, I'll probably try to have some activity where we all discover our Myers-Briggs type or something like that. I love it. I do want to interject. I did hear say that question and answer session is over, so I don't know if that's an impact or not or relevant.
She unmuted everybody, so now we're
okay.
It's fine. We're fine.
I find that to gain credibility, that it is a process right now to gain credibility in healthcare, but facts, data, is important, and it's important to the committees that are trying to make a decision about what to do with a physician who's been labeled as disruptive. And a lot of times the letters I will get from wellness committees or group practitioners, the head of a group practice, is there'll be terminology like you need inpatient care, we want a diagnosis, we want to talk to your medical staff. And that is coming from a medical model point of view. So I do have a therapist that as a resource that, you know, can give a diagnosis I sort of have an intuitive sense about when I'm getting in over my head, but she can verify that, yes, this is just a person under stress at work if need be, and that seems to be satisfactory. And then I have the assessment I really, really like is an emotional intelligence assessment that is not self-report. And self-report, like...
Oh.
You know, yes, I'm great with everybody. I'm, you know, made 100% on my emotional intelligence, but it gives a 27-page printout of a thumbprint that really looks at how a person is in relation to another, especially when under stress. So I put together, at the end of my coaching engagement, I put together about a 70-page report that uses data, concrete data, as to what, where the snags are and where the work needs to be done. And I think that's real important in medicine.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Okay. Do we have another question?
This is Judy. And Sarah, do you work with nurses or nursing administrators or other medical professionals as well?
I have somewhat specialized with physicians. At some point I think it would be great to do teamwork. I have done training with nurses. One of the things, honestly, the nursing staff is a whole different animal from my point of view. It's got a whole different history. But yet they do have to relate as a team. One of the things I do with nurses is help them to work with physicians who are being disruptive. Not that they should tolerate that behavior, but what are some ways that they can keep their red alert signal from going in off and getting sort of frozen? How can they be assertive? Properly assertive with a physician who is being aggressive.
And you're that's
something. We've got some nurses on the call, and so I was just kind of wondering from their perspective what your work might be like. Just to go in another direction, you and I were both at the spiritual intelligence certification last week, and I'm wondering, since you do use a lot of instruments and you use emotional intelligence, do you see a role for the spiritual intelligence work in your working position?
I think what I would do, there was quite a bit of talk about how these are good the assessment is a good conversation starter, and I think I'm brand new to it, so I'm not quite sure how I would use it, but I do think it would be a good tool to use to start a conversation about their feeling about spirituality and what they bring spiritually into their work.
We'll have to follow up with you if you ever do use it. It'd be fun to have you tell us more about how that works for you with physicians. Thank you.
Yes. I tell you one thing about physicians, and I assume this is true as well for nurses, is if they're a hard audience to capture, and it's really challenging to get them to take more than one assessment. And their time, they're very geared to being very efficient and spare with their time.
Yeah, that makes sense. So you really have to pick and choose kinds of exercises or assessments or homework that you might give them really have to fit into their schedule.
Yes, because that assessment is 175 questions. So I might have to trade it off with another one that would take, you know, an hour to do, or just kind of pick and choose and use what I've learned from that right now to bring up some conversations.
Great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Other questions?
Hi, this is Lisa Cornforth, and I'm a nursing student, and I was wondering if you could recommend any reading about dealing with the nursing staff, as you mentioned.
You mean in regards to how nurses might be able to deal with a difficult doctor?
No, more as a nursing student with
nursing staff,
other staff, and instructors.
Yes, that is an emerging issue that I'm actually getting phone calls from female residents who are having challenges dealing with nursing team. And I, you know what, Lisa, if you send me an email, I will research this for you and try to give you the best answer that I can. A lot of what I know is by word of mouth or through a consultant out of Chicago, and her name isn't coming to me right now, but you're asking a very important question, especially as a student, and I think the relationship skills are critical to master being a nurse. So I'm sorry I can't give
fine.
You a
okay.
book.
Right, I'll email you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
I always appreciate how thorough you are, Sarah, how thorough. And like you said, you do like to research and study, so I appreciate that. You bring a lot with that. And I think the other day you told me besides nurses and physicians, you work with other people as well. Is that correct?
I do. I have worked with high-level or owners or CEOs of healthcare companies or of companies that provide vendor services, like provide emergency rooms for hospitals or the emergency service for a hospital system. I've done that. I've seen things from sort of the CEO's point of view. I have a special place in my heart for residents and for people in training to work with healthcare. And I try to make 20% of my coaching pro bono. And I know that when you're in medical school or in training, oftentimes you're as poor as a church mouse, and I see it as part of my calling to offer that, you know, as a service as well. But I fairly much stick with the medical profession. But another area though that I do coach in, I love to coach coaches, and I seem to be a natural for coaches, and they seem to come to me a lot for their own personal sort of issues. So I sort of sometimes step into a life coaching role with them, and also talk about how to manage beginning coaching and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Great, great. And how are we doing on the questions? We have time for some more questions. Do we have another one? Okay, well, what I'd love to hear more about, I'm just fascinated by your, I think you said it was a two-day weekend that you offer people. Could you tell us more about how that comes about and the kind of work you do during those 2 days? Is it unique to each person? Is it something that you do that's, you know, that everybody, it's the same process for everybody?
Well, everything I do is very customized, but I have found with physicians, they are smart learners, And I've also found that oftentimes getting them to getting their time and attention is a real strategy. It's a real, you know, sort of needed to know how to do kind of strategy. And so usually asking them to come in for 2 days and say, you've got 2 days here with me, you get a lot done as far as understanding them, knowing you. In the beginning, oftentimes they come and they rest and they sleep and they're tired. And we allow that. We sit with them. We make dinner together. We make dumplings together. We do all kinds of sort of different relaxing things. And then we start doing, you know, I may give them an assessment to take that evening before they go to bed. And they will sit down and do that. And then we'll have some results and talk about specifics. But it's real interesting. It's like, almost like a piece of clay. It's very sort of broad in the beginning, but you start to see things forming. And sometimes I come in with my own assumptions, and I try to keep that very open and really figure out what it is that they're struggling with and where they're getting snagged. And usually once we get the results from the relationship EQ, we really figure it out.
So it's a lot of conversations, interaction through conversations.
Yes, and I really put in a lot. I have to rest next week because it's very intensive. But then we do follow-up coaching because the idea of coaching is the benefit of it is little bits over a period of time because they may learn some things about themselves, but that will wear off in about 6 weeks unless they practice it and keep it in the forefront of their brain. So, you know, they really need to do the action part of things and be held, you know, have someone to talk to and be accountable for you know, their transformation.
Mm-hmm. That sounds wonderful. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll open any other questions. Okay. So is there anything else you'd like to offer us, Sarah, about your approach to coaching or any other stories you might like to share?
Well, I'm trying to, let me think of, there's so many stories.
So many stories.
Okay. Yeah. I guess perhaps the main thing I would say is that I really think that there is a place for bringing a whole self into the work place, and that's the mission and the purpose of the Tyson Center. And I think physicians are extremely ripe ground for this because it is about healing, and it is in healing. You know, as I say, a patient doesn't care what you know until they know you care. So it's about, you know, connecting to something inside of us. And for me, it's love. And I'm not afraid to use that word, but, you know, it may be, you know, you may see yourself as a vessel for a higher power or a certain philosophy. And I do see myself as a vessel, and I see simply what I do, my trade secret, if you will, is I really love and really care about the clients that I work with. And
I've always experienced that around you, just when I'm with you or when I hear you speak. That's definitely very present, very clear. You know, I have it's more of a marketing question, but how do people find you? How do these physicians find you? I know you have a website, but how do they know about you? Is it pretty much word of mouth?
Yes, it's in different ways, but it is word of mouth, and usually chief medical officers. Someone had mentioned Francine Gayor. It's being, you know, certified in certain areas. But I'm really surprised over time. It seems like I'm getting more. This whole area is sort of really new and evolving, but I'm getting more self-referrals from physicians who now know, let's just say surgeons, who now know that behavior that is disruptive is not going to be tolerated, and they're being called before a committee, and they are kind of being proactive in seeking out some help. And so I'm usually found through the website quite a bit more than I was before.
Okay.
And I honestly, I think that it's my approach that I do take a non-punitive approach in working with physicians, and I think that is attractive to them because they, you know, instead of being always pointed at as the bad guy and we're going to punish you and there's something pathological about you, it's good that coaching says what's right with you. You know, we understand you. What's your spirit? What's your calling?
Well, thank you so much, Sarah. Everything you've expressed today is so it's so heartfelt, and I can tell it makes such a difference in this medical profession, which is, having so many issues and having so much attention put on it these days, that I'm very grateful that you're in there supporting these wonderful human beings. As you said, they're healers. They're really wanting to make a difference, and I hear the vessel that you are to support them in reconnecting with that and bringing that to their patients and their loved ones. And thank you so much for sharing all that you have today with us. We've learned more about how you work with physicians and what that means for all of us and all the gifts that you bring. Thank you, thank you. And I'm going to I have an announcement. I'm going to see if Judy has any announcements, and then we'll come back to you, Sarah, for a closing comment. Although the first announcement is, could you tell us a website and or an email how somebody could contact you if they want to follow up with you today? I know you specifically invited one person to do that. How would they reach you?
They can reach me at Sarah, S-A-R-A, at T, like in true, N, like in north, coaching.com. That's my website, truenorthcoaching.com, but it's Sarah at tncoaching.com, or through the website here at the Tyson Center for Faith and Spirituality in the Workplace.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Our next call in this series on coaching is Thursday, May the 24th at 1:30 Central Time, and we'll be interviewing Barry Goldberg, who, if you were on at the beginning of the call, you heard him say hello to us. So it's Thursday, May the 24th at 1:30 Central Time, and Judy, I know, will be sending out an announcement before that call to tell you how to be on the call and inviting you to join us and reminding you to be with us then. Judy, do you have any other comments or announcements you want to make?
We have a couple of workshops coming up, and one is next week, May 1st and 2nd, on integrating change, and that's open to the public. Our faculty member is Mel Toomey from Connecticut, who is a very successful businessman and educator, and I call him a Zen master, although he probably laughs that off. People have transformations around him that are very powerful. So we have that coming next week. And on June 1st and 2nd, we're starting a year-long series certificate program in authentic leadership, and I will be one of the two facilitators. The other is Gary Bolhauer, who is the chair of the Divinity Department at Scholastica College up in Wisconsin. And so we start with a weekend, June 1st and 2nd, the first of four weekends, and they'll have coaching in between. So if you or someone else is interested in that, please feel free to contact me. I think my last announcement is please save the dates October 30th through November 1st. That's our International Wisdom at Work Conference at the University of Arkansas, and we hope that all of you will be there.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jill. Well, I plan to be there. Please come join us. That'd be wonderful for everybody that's here today to join us. It's a wonderful, wonderful conference. I was there last year, and it's a beautiful, beautiful experience. So So, Sarah, what would you like to say in closing today?
Well, I was in a hospital once with a family member, actually, and I noticed there was something very different about that hospital. They took time out, or a buzzer went off, and everyone was to stop for a moment and either pray or meditate. And I just, having been in several hospitals on a professional basis, I just kept thinking something is really different about this hospital. And I was standing by the chapel, and I saw a plaque on the wall that said, "Be ye kind to one another." And I think that's what I would like to leave the thought with today, is there's a lot of power in that, and that's really, you know, no matter who you're coaching and what profession, but it's really, you know, kindness is my religion, so to speak. It's really very, very powerful and transformative of who we are as human beings and how we relate to one another.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for reminding us of this very powerful message of kindness. Thank you. And thank you so much, Sarah, for all you've offered us today. I've learned a lot, and it's been wonderful spending this time with you and everybody else that's been on the call today. Thank you so much for being with us, and we look forward to you joining us next month. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you, Peggy. Thank you. Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks, Vivian.